I've got flavor, mister.
Yeah, that's that says all we need to know. Let me tell you something about flavor. Anybody with flavor never says that they have it.
It's Tuesday, July 28th, and this is episode, what are we at? 170?
Yep.
170. On Taking Pictures, 170. Jesus, that's a lot. 170.
I know. We're old. Ugh. You know how old we are?
Well.
We're 170 weeks old.
You feel older than I am.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all right, because you are older than you think you are.
So, no way.
So it all works out perfectly.
Didn't we cover the whole flavor thing? I have it, mister.
So do we have follow-up from last week? Where do you want to start?
So this is On Taking Pictures.
Who are you?
Jeffrey Sidoris.
Okay.
Soon to be an East Coaster.
Yeah. You got like 15, 20 years before you can call yourself that. But go
is
ahead.
Is it really? All right. Counting down. Next week will be the last show that I do in California. That's weird to me.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
The world's shifting on its axis as we speak.
It really is. And somewhere Freddie Clark is just screaming, no!
Freddie Clark is looking to move to California.
That's right. It's odd. It's really odd. But so not next week's show, but the following week's show will be from DC. Hey, we probably should have talked about this offline, but did you want to do a Q&A show on that?
Yeah.
That one?
Not next week, but the week after. So, we'll start doing
it. The 11th or the 12th?
Yeah. All right. We'll do that. And then I'll put a thing in the,
we haven't done one in a while. And those
no,
are fun.
We haven't. They are fun. I'll put a thing in the show notes and we'll put a thing on the group.
Yep. So if you have questions, you can email them podcast@ontakingpictures.com. You can tweet Bill at Bill Wadman. You can tweet me at Jeffrey Sidoris, or put them in the group. If you're not yet a member of the OTP G+ group, while G+ is still going.
From what I understand, yes, some things are getting cut off, but the group, the way that we use the group is staying as it is, as it has been for a long time, from what I understand.
Okay. Well, you know what would be great? Just add threaded conversations that you can actually find.
Yeah.
It would also be nice
to be able to add images to comments.
Yes.
For our purposes, that would be very helpful.
Yeah, that would be terrific.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's a little bit of a little bit of baseball business.
All right, hey, so where do you want to start?
And spoiler, we got a new sponsor.
We do have a new sponsor this
I'm
week.
Excited about this one.
I am as well, and I'm hoping to get one to try out.
Me too.
All right, well, maybe we'll make that happen.
Test drive.
Yep.
Okay. What have you been up to? You all right? You okay?
Yeah, I was on the shore, the Jersey Shore. Went to the Jersey Shore this week and
Did you fist pump and get in a bar fight?
No, it was actually pretty staid, actually. I was expecting it to be much more, I wanted to see more of the situation, and, you know, I saw
was
a
he
lot
not there?
Less. I don't think he was there. Not where I was.
Were any of, is that show still going?
Actually, you know what I've actually been pretty impressed with? It was my first experience with the beach shirt, these sort of Lycra-esque shirts that people wear that are kind of SPF 50, these like long sleeve, they're made of like a Lycra kind of material. You go swim shirts and you go swimming in them. Yeah. You go swimming in them. Look up swim shirt and you'll get lots of this kind of stuff. And you can wear them and it's like a cycling shirt. Yes.
Type of
it's kind of like a cycling shirt, but you go swimming in it. And you get out of the water and they dry really quickly, but they're also like SPF 50. So you don't have to worry about getting burnt in the parts that are covered. So they're
could I
neat.
Wear one of these whilst I cycle?
I'm sure you could. I don't see why not. So anyway, just wanted to put that out there. I experienced those for the first time. It was pretty awesome. Yeah.
Short sleeve. Oh, wow. Yeah. UPF. What's the difference in UPF and SPF? This reads UPF 50.
I think that is like UV radiation, versus, you know what I mean? I think some sort of weird, because now there's like the UVA versus UVB. I don't know. I can't keep track of all this stuff. But other than that, it's good. And yeah, I put out that movie last week. Did you see the one where the guy's eating cereal?
I did see it.
It's cute.
I like the music.
It was fun.
I'm impressed that you still have your chops. Wait, now wait a minute. But yeah. As I just said that, I just thought of this.
What?
Did you play that now, or was that some archived thing that you found?
I played that 10 years ago.
No.
Although I did have to go.
Could you play that now?
Sure. That's yeah. easy to play. But
is it really? It sounds really beautiful.
No, that's not that bad. But the funny thing was that I wanted to use a better sample, because nowadays there's better piano samples than there are, you know, back in the day.
Oh, okay.
So I needed to get the MIDI files out of the software I used to use, which at the time was Sonar on Windows.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to install Windows in a VM so that I can install the Sonar 4 from 2002 or whatever the hell it was.
Nice.
And then open up this file, export the MIDI file, drag that over into Logic, find a better piano, and, you know, did this whole thing so to improve.
Okay,
so the
performance was from 10 years ago, but the sound itself is new. Contemporary.
Yeah.
That just blows me away. Yeah. MIDI been around forever, but it still just blows my mind.
Yeah.
That you can say, okay, I'm going to take this performance, but let's just update what it sounds like.
That's exactly it. And then I needed, there's sort of two pieces. There's like the piece at the beginning when they're pouring, and then there's the where it kicks in when they start eating. The part where it kicks in is from 10 years ago. The part while they're pouring, I had to write in order to just have like a little bridge to get to the other part.
Hmm.
So it was a little bit of fun, but yeah, it was fun. I like making movies.
You should keep doing it. I like seeing you do things that are out of your wheelhouse, so to speak.
Yeah, that's the idea.
I like that a lot. So well done you.
So people apparently say that we gave Robert Frank short shrift. What is the word?
I don't know. I'm going to let you handle that one.
You'll let me hang myself?
That's right. Okay. There was a comment on the group.
Short shrift is apparently the correct answer. Go ahead.
Shrift?
Yes. Shrift.
Short shrift.
Yep.
It sounds like you're trying to say short shift, but you just messed up.
Right. It's a rapid and unsympathetic dismissal or curt treatment.
Ah, I shrift you, sir.
Yes. Go ahead.
Yeah. All right. Nicholas writes, I think you guys were pretty harsh about Robert Frank's influence. He clearly was more subversive and original than Cartier-Bresson, whose own pictures of the USA weren't particularly flattering. Yet the Americans was initially unappreciated in the United States. The editors of Popular Photography derided Frank's, quote, warped, wart-covered images of hate, end quote, that the photographers were blurry, asymmetrical, shot at oblique angle. The photographs, I'm sorry, were shot blurry, oblique angles, and deliberately informal, attracted more screeds. The problem was, as the critic Janet Malcolm would later explain, no one had ever made pictures like that before. Okay. Is there a dog barking?
Not here.
Okay. Might be, but sorry if there's a dog barking. It really seems like his work came out and became like a thunderbolt, and I'm trying to think of another photographer who was or is as influential on fellow artists. Okay, I can only comment on my own influence. I can't comment on influence of others, you know, the photographic community.
Sure.
So, you know, I don't know if you know, saying we got it wrong, or it's just my opinion. And I like some of his work, but it's odd. Whenever people mention Frank in discussions that I've had anyway, it's always in reference to the Americans.
Yeah.
It's not in reference to this enormous body of work. It's, well, when he did the Americans, or have you seen the Americans, or
yeah.
You know what I mean? So that seems to be the pinnacle, at least in what I've experienced in discussing Frank's work.
Yeah. It's 83 pictures. That's really what we're talking about. You know,
and I mean, I guess maybe it's hard for me to relate to because I wasn't around at that time, and I'm not really I don't have any firsthand knowledge of the photographic community at that time, but it seems that there were others that were just as influential.
Yeah. Or this maybe goes back to that whole idea of like sort of the school of a certain group of people that we've talked about before. You know, the remember we were talking about the Cindy Sherman and the other woman. The other two women.
The article from a couple weeks ago. Sure.
Yeah. Where like maybe Robert Frank was the one that stood out, but obviously there were other people in the area doing the same kind of stuff or similar kinds of work. Right. You know, that it is much the community as it is a singular genius that pops out of that kind of stuff.
Sure.
It's interesting. The reason I put it in there is both because people were talking about it on the group. And also because I was reading this article, this essay by Jeff Dyer, who I'm a big fan of, talking about Trent Park, the photographer. And in one part of it, where is it? Let me see. Where's the rhymer? Okay, here we go. The most obvious debt in dream life is to Robert Frank. We don't want to get bogged down in the anxiety of photographic influence, but it is possible that, as an artist, Park became fully himself only had thoroughly assimilated the lessons of Frank's vision. So it's interesting that even somebody like Jeff Dyer, whose writings on photography I think are amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. If you haven't read The Ongoing Moment, listeners,
it's fantastic.
It's fantastic. Yeah.
It's very dense, but fantastic. But here he is referencing it in a way that is very sort of, oh, this was this watershed moment. And this guy, obviously, Park obviously understood that. And that's where everything changed, you know, sort of the idea that, you know, I guess in the painting world, maybe it was sort of, you know, Picasso around 1906, you know, when he started doing the, you know, the crazy Five Mademoiselle kind of things, you know, like maybe that's a big turn in painting in a way that no one had done before or whatever.
Couldn't you make the same argument with Frank, with Eggleston in terms of changing the sort of, the lens that shooters shot through?
And the fact that he used color and all the rest of it. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, William Eggleston is a good example of somebody else who you could say that Eggleston arguably has influenced modern photographers, as in the people younger than you or me, like the generation younger than us, way more than Robert Frank did. Now, Robert Frank probably feels really old to some 22-year-old kid who takes pictures that, in my view, feel much more like Eggleston than they do Frank. Maybe
do
not.
Do you think, I mean, it sounds like what you're saying, and I'm not going to assume, but do you think Eggleston's work feels more timeless in that respect?
No, I just think that it's further along the timeline.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It's new. It's more recent, right? It's like, it's like saying, yes, okay, Elvis, you know, made music that made people think, okay, then the Beatles, and then, you know, I don't know who Elvis Costello or David Bowie, and then Nirvana, or, you know, whatever sort of these watershed moments in music where somebody did something that changed kind of the way people look at music.
Sure.
People who are into David Bowie are going to look at Elvis and think, oh, that's so cute, you know? And I think that there's a little bit of that with photographers now looking back. Like, this is for people who, when the Americans came out, that was like a big deal. It's a bigger deal for the people who were there at the time it came out than it is for the people who look at it later. Not, you know, perhaps, I might be wrong, but it feels that way to me.
I think you can point to a number. I mean, and people that we've talked about before, without Kirtesh and Aceh, would there have been a Frank?
Right. Yeah.
And sort of then without Frank, who, I mean, it's hard to trace those influences directly.
Yeah. Everything layers on top of itself. Right.
Right. Right. And you know, I'm not trying to take away from Frank's contribution or from his influence. I get a little uncomfortable when we make absolutes, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's true. You know, I'll tell you though,
article you put in though.
Oh, it's Jeff Dyer. He just has a way of speaking, you know, that is just, I'll put it in the show notes. It's called, Jeff Dyer on Trent Park. Interestingly enough, it's from 2008. It's from a while ago. You know, it was interesting though that 2 weeks ago when I was in DC, I guess it was a week and a half ago, I went and saw that contemporary photography exhibit that you had seen and we discussed a few weeks ago.
Caught in a moment? No. Okay.
You know what I'm talking about, though.
Yeah, yeah.
At the National
The Memory
Gallery.
Of Time. The Memory of Time.
Okay.
Sorry.
In also in a adjacent gallery was a sort of a, you know, a wrap up of photography at the National Gallery, and it went all the way back to Daguerre, all the way through to let me see where it stopped, somewhere during color photography in the 60s, so maybe Eggleston-y kind of area, right, 70s, that kind of thing. But I will tell you that, like, looking through all that stuff, and I got to, say, Irving Penn, there were a few Irving Penn portraits there, and I go, yeah, it didn't really get any better after that. Like, to me, like, in my opinion, you know what I mean? Like, I look at Irving Penn and I go, wow, like, he kind of nailed it in a way that these people after him, I mean, they all did interesting things, but none of them have surpassed it for me, you know?
Interesting.
And maybe somebody will, you know? And look, it wasn't a complete exhaustive thing of all photography of all time, but of the stuff that was on the walls, by the time it got to Penn, I was like, yeah, okay, the next thing is different, but it certainly doesn't have the same level of skill or intensity or thought, it felt like, that went into it. And that's one person's opinion.
Work?
It's mostly just the studio portrait stuff that just kills me. You know, it's so right. You know, you look at it and you go, wow. Yeah, okay, you nailed it. Like, everyone just get out of the way. But that's just me, right? For somebody else, maybe it's Cindy Sherman, and they go, oh, wow, look at this crazy conceptual thing. Or maybe it's, you know, some young guy today that I don't know about, 'cause he's turning things on their head with his phone that I either don't understand, can't understand, or haven't found out about, you know, in the same way that we talked about how music imprints you when you're younger.
Right,
you know,
right.
Maybe we're visually imprinted when we're younger, and that's why we have a hard time seeing things the way the new kids are seeing things. A relative of mine, well, by marriage, I guess, is a musician.
Wait, you're married?
Yeah, is a musician out in California, and
right.
He went to Berkeley, and he's really good. He's good, and he put up a video on Fender Them on Facebook, and he put up a video on Facebook yesterday, and. And it's good. The song's good. It's catchy. You know, it's got that sort of modern LA sound to it that I wouldn't really know where to start to get. And he's doing well with it. And, but it doesn't necessarily dig into me and make me want to listen to it 30 times, you know?
Right. Right.
And I don't know if that's 'cause it's not amazingly great or because I'm old, you know, like I just don't get it. So I don't know.
Let me ask you something.
Yeah.
When going back to a little bit ago, when you talking about Penn, when you go into, say, looking at a new body of work by a photographer, or we'll stick with photography for this.
Okay.
Do you go into it with the idea that we've got to get beyond Penn for me to even take notice of this, or are you able to allow yourself a blank slate going in and letting the work stand on its own?
Oh, that's interesting. I would probably say myself, I probably have biases that I don't even realize.
Mm-hmm,
I think we probably all do, even if we think we are looking at things with a clean slate. I think it's just built into it, you know? You know, that's interesting. I hadn't really thought of that. I will tell you that when I went through that contemporary thing that you talked about, there was maybe 20 or 30% of them that I went, oh, that's a really neat conceptual idea. Mm-hmm. Right. There was a lot of them that I was like, okay, you were trying to do something completely different and you came up with that. Sure. Okay. And then there's some of them that I was like, really?
Right.
And I was amazed that a good over half of them, for a contemporary photography exhibit, we're using really old processes. Like their way forward was to go backwards.
Right. And that's what stuck out for me. The pieces that I was most drawn to were the pieces that were most sort of process oriented.
Yeah.
Whether it was the big, that giant daguerreotype, which, come on, that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, no, that was pretty cool.
Like 40 inch across, you know, daguerreotype. Or the salt paper print that was immersed. It was a photograph of the Salton Sea here in California, and the salt, the salt in from the paper. The yeah, it was dipped right. into the salt and sea.
And that stuff's cool from like a, oh, look at you being really artsy and taking the time to actually conceive of it and actually pull it off. But I also felt like in some ways that made me think, you know what? Current contemporary photography doesn't really know where to go. Like we don't know where to go. So we're kind of circling back on ourselves to figure did I miss something towards the beginning of the book? You know, it's like, and I think that that's true of all art forms where there's a certain stagnation that happens before something breaks out. Mm-hmm. None of the stuff that I saw there made me think, oh, they're breaking out into something really new. It's like, oh, that was an interesting idea, but none of it was, oh wow, that's the future of photography.
Okay.
Okay. And I don't mean that to put everybody, I'm not trying to put everybody down. I'm just saying in a general sense of like where photography is right now, I think it's swirling around on top of itself rather than breaking new ground. It could be the time we're in. It could be that photography is like, you know, hit some kind of wall and needs to go in some other dimension. It could be, you know, who knows, right? And maybe in hindsight, we'll see stuff that I don't see now. Who knows? You know. Anyway, it's just it's interesting. And so the whole Robert Frank thing. Yeah, I think we gave him a lot of credit. Could we have given him more credit? I guess. Is there somebody else who we could have listed as even more influential? Well, who knows? I guess they're all kind of influential in some way. All these people we discuss.
Well, it's kind of genre dependent too.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're a street photographer,
if you're a documentary street photographer, yeah, Robert Frank probably speaks to you, you know. Right.
If you're a fashion shooter, then, you know, maybe it's Avedon or Testino.
Cecil Beaton.
Yes, sure. If you're a glamour, then it's, you know, maybe George Harrell,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. So anyway, put that out there. Links in the show notes. What do you want to do about this? Best that you can do doesn't mean the best there is. I like that.
Right?
How do you want to present this whole thing?
Well, okay. There's all this back and forth in photography. And you and I were talking about this last week. And I don't remember where I lost the link now, but it was somebody, you know, why I'll never go back to Lightroom from Capture One.
Actually,
you know,
it was why I'll never use DNG.
Oh, okay, that's what it was. That's what it was. Maybe we can put that.
I'll find it. Keep going.
Yeah. So photography is one of these weird disciplines where a segment of people who are involved in photography are constantly looking for best. Or, you know, these sort of listicle posts of, you know, the five best ways to shoot a portrait or the five, you know, top lighting method, whatever it is, it is. And
yeah, this is the modifier to, you know, to beat all modifiers or
right.
whatever.
I mean, you may like, you know, a softbox, you know,
Nikon Patrick, does this so much better than Canon does.
Yeah. Yeah. Patrick loves a ring light in his moon unit and gets some fantastic stuff.
Patrick's wrong, but go ahead.
Cause
he's not using the best.
Right. So this thing came out about why I'll never use DNG and that got into, you know, because Lightroom doesn't do this and Capture One does.
Yeah.
And there's no discussion here other than to just say stop.
Yeah.
Just stop. Just get out and make things and quit worrying about whether, you know, your thing is 5% sharper at the corners or resolves, you know, 10% more pixels. Just stop. When we do research for the show, even it's amazing to see how many of these articles are out there, how many people are still talking about it, how many podcasts are talking about this stuff.
Yeah.
And none of this stuff is going to make you take any better pictures.
No,
none of it.
Interestingly enough, just as an aside, I downloaded the latest version of Capture One and took a regular CR2 Canon photo into it. And then I took a DNG version of it into it. And I brought the same things into Lightroom and I fiddled with Lightroom a little bit and matched Lightroom to C1. And it's like, it all comes down with where you're starting with, you know,
Sure.
Capture One is starting with a curve on the specific kind of file that it is because they figured out a curve that they like that is their default. Well, yep. You could create that curve and make it your default in Lightroom if you really wanted to. Like there was more sharpening automatically put on in Capture One than there was in Lightroom. And the colors were a little bit different. So you change your profile in Lightroom and you get closer to that and you fiddle a little bit. And I got two that are virtually indistinguishable from the two of them. It's not like,
sure.
Oh, this engine is so more capable than the other engine. It's like, that's a bunch of bull.
I think it really comes down to files too. I mean, yeah. I've looked at, and I haven't looked 6.1, the newest Lightroom?
Yeah, 6.6.6. Well, it's CC theoretically, so I don't know what officially is. But go ahead.
For me, the files coming out of the Fuji, they look a little better on Capture One at, let's say, 200%.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so are they going to look better in print? Probably not.
No. And you know what? And I bet you if you sharpened a little more in Lightroom or whatever
right,
it is, like
right.
you're literally, quite literally splitting hairs.
Yeah.
You know, and neither of these
comes
has
down
anything.
To workflow.
Yes, exactly. It's like, if you like using the way that Capture One organizes things, great. Or you mm-hmm. like the way its color correction tools work a little more like video ones where you have, you know, the little thing at the center and you move it up or down.
Right. Right. More of like a color grading type of a
yeah.
thing.
Then great, super, you know, but it is not about like the results I can get out of this are in, you know, so obviously better than they are over here. It's come on. Like no person who isn't getting paid will ever, you know, anyone who really knows who isn't getting paid is never going to say that kind of stuff. They're all just going to say, yeah, it's a tool, whatever.
Right.
Use your
right.
tool, you know?
Yeah. Anyway, just get out and make things.
Yeah.
Quit worrying about
put that out there.
Silliness.
It is amazing though. People like doing that kind of stuff, right? They like it. There's a certain amount of my team is better than your team in photography.
Yeah. And it's odd. I mean, you and I have joked about this, that, you know, I doubt that anybody walked up to de Kooning and go, well, yeah, so whose brushes are you using, man?
Yeah.
Cause those brushes, they make good paintings.
It's kind of weird, right?
Yeah, it's very strange.
And especially nowadays, like every single thing that you could possibly buy, you go to B&H, you throw a rock at a camera and you hit it and you go, I want that camera. All of them are great now.
Yeah.
I was playing with the other day, I had dinner with Francisco Graciano, my Francisco, and he had just gotten, he and the Paul Taylor people are down in South America for a tour. And so he bought an iPhone 6 Plus, is that the big one, right?
It's the big plus. One, yeah.
He bought the iPhone 6 Plus to have on the trip, and he's going to use that as his only camera. And he bought like some of those little clip-on lenses and stuff, but
like the Ollie clip or something.
Yeah,
or
one of those.
Moment
things.
Is another one. Moment.
Yeah. So, but even sitting at the, we were sitting at this bar getting the meatball shop, which is really good down the Lower East Side. And I was just playing with it, and I opened it up. And I just took a picture of like the ketchup bottle or whatever it is, and I'm like looking at it, and I'm like, man, this looks good. Like, it's really good in a way that you really wouldn't even expect it to be, in a way that's much better than, say, my iPhone 5 I'm still using until the new one comes out, you know? And you kind of go, all of this stuff is just so freaking good that, like, there's nothing to complain about.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I got to get myself a 5DS. So if anybody wants to, I'm just kidding. I would like one of those. Those are kind of nice.
What is it?
The new 5D, the 5DS. The 50 megapixel.
Oh, okay. The Canon. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. I was like, wait, no, it's a 5S. What are you talking about?
Hey, we should talk about one of our sponsors.
We should.
Let's talk about Squarespace.
Let's do that.
You know why, Jeffrey? Because Squarespace is the easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas.
Seriously, if you want to build it beautiful.
Yeah.
See what I did there?
That was nice. That was nice. I'll tell you, I got two emails last week from random people saying, hey man, like I love your site. Like how do I do that? Like literally I got two emails and I was just like, actually it's a Squarespace site. So go, you know, use the offer code OTP and you can have a site just like it. And I was adding something to my blog the other day and then I was adding that serial thing to my little short film page on my site. And I was just like, man, I'm so glad I don't have to deal with any of this stuff anymore. It just sort of works and I don't have to think about it.
It really does.
And security stuff is fine and it never gets overloaded. And it's just like, it's just good. You know,
it's like butter.
It is like butter. It's simple, powerful, and beautiful, Jeffrey. And
like
it's all, and they're always there. Squarespace is always there for you when you need them. They offer 24/7 support via live chat and email. And it starts at just $8 a month. You get a free domain name if you buy Squarespace for the year. Every site made on Squarespace is automatically going to be responsive, so your website scales to look great on any device. And every site comes with free online store, comes with commerce, and they've got this new cover pages feature, which is super handy if you have like a new show or a new album coming out or a new book, say, as a photographer. So every time somebody comes to your site, they see this page. It's just like, hey, my new book is about to be out. Order here or come to the site. Lets you set up a beautiful one-page online presence in minutes. So go get started with a free trial. You don't need any credit card. And start building your website today. When you sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code OTP to get 10% off your purchase. To show your support for On Taking Pictures. So thank you so much to Squarespace for their continued support of 5x5 and On Taking Pictures. Squarespace, build it beautiful.
I got to tell you, if you go to Squarespace right now, go right now. This apothecary, the way they've done it with the flowers overlapping the screen, and it's just really pretty.
Yeah, that's nice.
It's really well done. I'm not a huge fan of the Build It Beautiful font that they used.
That particular font?
That particular font.
Oh, that handwriting looking thing?
Yeah, it looks like the I gets lost and it looks like Build Plus Beautiful.
Yeah. Hey, look, they're using Craig Ward as one of their sites on here. Scroll down. The artist thing is Craig, my buddy Craig.
Wait. Oh, yeah, there it is.
Yeah.
Hi, Craig.
That's my friend. You can't go wrong. You really can't go wrong. They're great. All right. Where do you want to go from here?
Costa Rica.
You want to go to Costa Rica? I've never been to Costa Rica.
I never have either.
Conrad's been to Costa Rica, but I've never gone.
I have a friend that has a house in Panama.
God, that's so tempting. Sorry.
Anyway, so I was looking around, as I often do, and came across, have you ever heard of Jermaine Krull? Have you heard of this photographer?
I have never heard of Jermaine Krull in my life.
Nor have I. And this article was titled, well, it still is titled. It wasn't, was titled.
It's
still,
it used to be titled. It's still the same changed. Title.
Jermaine Krull, the modernist photographer that time forgot. A new exhibition sheds light on the work of Jermaine Krull, favorite of Man Ray and forgotten pioneer of modern photography. And I'd never heard of this person and am so glad that I came across this article because it's absolutely beautiful. In the 1920s, Man Ray said to photographer Jermaine Krull, quote, Jermaine, you and I are the greatest photographers of our time. I in the old sense, you in the modern one.
It's good stuff.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Born 1897 on the border between Germany and the Russian Empire, Krull spent most of her childhood traveling Europe with her family and as a result received an informal education courtesy of her engineer father. And I got to tell you that the work is just fascinating. I love that. I mean, this like the blacks just crush. They just go, and they're like, there's.
She probably didn't have much of a choice to that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying that, you know, tools of the time and whatnot.
Sure.
But yeah. But like, multiple exposure and the collage kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Nudes. It's funny though. It's like you look at this stuff there's one that's like kind of weird, the weird kind of solarized looking hands. I guess they're just cut out and that's why they kind of look solarized, because the edges, the collage and the it looks a lot like who's the Russian guy, Russian photography collage, Chernenko, what's his name, you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-mm. I'm drawing a blank.
Rodchenko. Alexander Rodchenko.
It's paste it in. Let me see. Okay. I know the name sounds familiar now that you mention it.
Yeah. He's the guy, you know, again, they talked about him in the Genius of Photography, the guy who did the thing with the parachute that folded out.
Okay.
So it's interesting that like a lot of these people are all they're all speaking from with a similar voice, you know. It's sort mm-hmm. of like this was the language of the time in which they lived. And so it's interesting. A lot of these things that these guys came up with are really, really cool. But yeah, I hadn't seen her. Now, do you think this is one of those things where she was ignored because she was female, or do you think it was just something completely unrelated?
I don't know. I hope that's not the case. I would prefer to think that it was because the work was more experimental or kind of fringe compared to what else was going on at the time. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't have enough information. But I look at this stuff and I go, gosh, this is amazing. I'd like to reinterpret some of this or let some of this bubble under the surface in my head for a little while and see what comes up. But
it's amazing the stuff that exists in photography, especially photography in the turn of the century, in the teens and the 20s. Mm-hmm. That was really ahead of its time compared to the stuff that came out in, say, the 40s and the 50s and the 60s, you know?
Yes.
It's just, it's like trippy, weird stuff. It's you know what it's like? It's like, you know, when you see evolution's sort of dead ends, you know, where they go back to the early days of fish underwater and stuff, and there's like, oh, there were these fish that had like weird scales that went out in every direction and had a mouth that was on their butt and whatever, and you were like, okay, that's not going to work, and it didn't work. It's sort of like this weird dead end that kind of died, right? You know,
right.
And I feel like, but evolution became just so experimental because there were no bounds, and it had to try everything before mm-hmm. it settled on what worked. And I feel like a lot of these people, you know, in the teens and 20s were doing work that we could probably all look back on and pull something out of today.
Sure.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, it didn't gain traction, but some of the other work did.
Yeah. And you look at it now and you kind of go, are you sure that's from the 20s? It looks too new. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like when you look at the Cameron portraits from the 1880s and you're like, that looks like some kid in Williamsburg. That can't be... You know, that can't be 1880. It's pretty cool. I will put a link in the show notes to
I thought you might like
crawl.
It.
Yeah, very cool.
Where do you want to go?
Oh, did you
drive for a while?
Okay. Did you see this? Did you see this thing? I thought you'd like this.
This thread thing?
Yeah. Did you see this?
Oh my gosh. This is so cool. Oh my God. Yeah.
Although I feel like this is a little bit, they, it's a little, what's the word I'm looking for? Misleading, the way they present this. So Forever 21.
I just like the tech behind it.
No. That part's awesome. So Forever 21 hired this company to create a machine that was, how many pixels by how many pixels is it? Does it say?
Well, it's
I can't quite count as many
64,
across.
It's 64 across.
Oh, is that all it is? So 64 by 64?
Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry. 80 by 80.
80 by 80.
Pixel okay. image.
Okay? There you go. Okay,
so the company is called Breakfast.
Okay, yeah, this company called Breakfast built this machine that essentially had, they say that it's made of, that it's, it creates pictures made out of thread. And they have different, what look like in the pictures, different colors of thread on bobbins? Is that a bobbin?
Uh-huh. Spools.
Spools. And the screen in the front can change based upon how those threads turn. And it makes it feel like it's like weaving it in real time or something. But really what it is that it's just got a spool in the front and a spool in the back. And there's sort of a track of thread that goes all the way around. And the track has sort of a rainbow of colors on it. So when they want it to get to red, they rotate it so that red's in front or blue's in front or whatever. Is that a fair way to say it? You see what I'm trying to explain?
I think you're dismissing what's going on a little bit.
Oh, I'm not saying just. I'm just saying it's not like the you and I understand how this was done, and if we had the technical expertise, we could probably pull it off. It's impressive. It's super cool that they did it.
I couldn't pull this off on my best day. I'm just blown away by this thing.
Oh, this is a cool idea. I mean, I look at this and I go, oh, yeah, I want to build that.
200,000 moving parts.
Oh, no, I'm not saying that it's easy. I'm saying it's amazing. But they make it sound as if, like, somehow the thread is being swapped out in real time to create the things. And what it really is just, like, a different colors along a strip, and it's just moving that part of the strip to the front. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's very, very, very cool. So they're using it, if you Instagram a hashtag F21 thread screen, and then you can go and watch F21threadscreen.com and wait until your picture pops up in somewhat real time.
Yeah.
Have you done this?
I have not tagged anything, but I watched it for probably 20 minutes watching the and it's just, there are transitions from one
last?
Picture to another. Well, one just came up just now.
Oh, okay,
so
I see it. Yeah.
3 or 4 seconds.
Okay, and then they jump to a new one.
And then it transitions. Sometimes it'll transition to the F21
little logo thing. Yep.
And then whoop, it wipes.
Yep, yep.
I mean, just the fact that it's doing that. And I love that, like, every once in a while there's like a stuck pixel, like where the thread didn't quite catch the right color.
Yep, yep. Do you think that, okay, a few questions. One, is this cool because it's mechanical?
Yes.
Okay. Secondly,
it's giant. I mean, you don't get the sense of scale just from looking at the YouTube video.
Yeah, it's like six or eight feet tall, right?
Isn't it really big.
Yeah. But do you also, my question is this good advertising? Because this must have cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to pull off, no?
I would think, yeah.
Right. Do you think that this is a worthwhile advertising, or is this one of those things where some advertising person said, I've got a great idea and we're going to spend all this money and, like, it's going to be great?
Well, I mean, it's not advertising directly. I mean,
other than the fact that it says Forever 21 down the bottom.
Yeah. I mean, the bigger question is, when this thing has run its course, what are they going to do with it? I hope it gets donated someplace.
Yeah, I wonder how mechanically it holds up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like if it's going to.
Yeah. Because the one thing that the spools, it's not just front to back. It's multiple trips front and back per spool.
How do you mean?
Here, look at this.
Oh, I see. Yeah. The 200,000 total parts one. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Right. Because it's so long, it's sort of got to go around a couple tracks to get the whole thing
down and back.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying. And then you've got all these hand.
I wonder why they did. They must've done that because they needed more distance and they didn't want to just make it longer.
That or more colors, because it looks like you've got primary colors in there. You've got some sort of pastel-y colors. You got, you know, secondary colors.
It's kind of cool though. It's like, you know, okay, we're going to take this picture. We're going to break it down to 80 by 80. We're going to do a map of that color. Okay. Where on wheel number 27 by 6 is that color? Okay. Where is it right now? All right. Move it 700 millimeters this way by turning it X amount of times. You know, it's like, it's all very, it's logical. I like it. I love it.
It's they're cartridges. Each sort of cartridge is an 8 by 8 spool sort of cartridge that they can pop in, almost like you would change ink on your printer.
Yeah. It's I wish that this is the kind of stuff I could do for a living. I would love to do this kind of stuff. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I thought you would like that.
I love this. Yeah. Thank you for putting this in. This is super cool.
Yeah. It's really cool.
I would love to just stand in front of this thing and watch it. It's New York City, right? It's in New York City.
Yeah. I guess it's at, is that the Forever 21 store? I don't know exactly where it is. But I'm sure we could find it if you come visit. There was an article in CNN the other day about this Moroccan photographer. You read this, right? I did.
Watched the movie. Yep.
Really, really interesting photos. You know what? They have a similar lighting feel to your French military things. The Waterloo kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Sam Faulkner.
Yeah.
Unseen Waterloo is the project.
There you go. Sort of, you know, the nice soft light from one corner, black background, like has a certain look to it. So she was saying that when she goes to Morocco, she has a hard time sometimes getting people to let you take their picture, that you could never get these pictures just walking down the street in Morocco, that people get aggressive And
just carrying a camera in the streets, which I found fascinating. Yeah.
And apparently for two reasons. One, that there's this association with witchcraft, the sort of concept that if you take my picture, you're stealing something from me.
Right. A soul or energy of some sort.
Yeah. And that you're going to use it to put a spell on me or something, you know. The second reason is that people are tired of European tourists coming in and taking photos of exotic Morocco.
Right.
And they feel that they're getting used.
Well, I mean, like India. You know, let's go take pictures of holy men.
Yeah.
Because they're bearded and wear, you know, strange clothes or whatever it is.
Yeah. We all want to be Steve McCurry, right?
Right.
And
there it is.
There's the title. But we like, you look at these kinds of things and you go, okay, that's all true. And she says she has to sort of talk people into letting them take their picture. And it kind of made me think about the whole idea of people not wanting you to take their picture, or how that's changed over time and stuff. And we've talked before about how people on the street nowadays react very differently than people did 40 years ago. When you heard, remember that documentary we were watching where they're talking to William Klein, and he's like, everybody wanted to be in pictures back then. It was like you were going to be famous, you know, that you were getting your picture taken, and people would mug for the camera, and kids would surround you and act out and all that kind of stuff. And it doesn't really happen nearly as much nowadays. And in fact, if anything, people do become not violent, but aggravated and aggressive towards a lot of people on the street. Like, what the hell are you doing taking my picture?
There's a mistrust there. What are you going to do with that?
Yeah,
why
exactly.
Are you doing that?
Right. Yeah. And you know, maybe that is the ultimate result of sort of that whole the guy taking the pictures through the windows kind of stuff, is that when people are pushing the boundaries of what is legally acceptable but perhaps morally questionable, sort of maybe breaking some sort of social contract, I think that becomes a problem, you know. And it was interesting because I was watching a Robert Frank video, which I'll put in the show notes. I think I put it in the show notes last week. It's on YouTube. If you do a search for Robert Frank on YouTube, you'll find this article, this thing called "Leaving Home, Coming Home: A Portrait of Robert Frank" from 2005. And there's a section of it where he's showing a bunch of stuff that he shot on the street and talking about how people back then, especially people who were dressed up in suits and hats and the whole thing, that photographers were such lowly people on the streets that they didn't get into confrontations with them because it was like they weren't worth the time. So they would sit there and just go about their day as if they weren't having their picture taken. And that's sort of part of what allows us nowadays to have all these pictures of people on the street looking like they don't care that they're getting a picture taken. Well, they didn't. Or it didn't have the same sort of effect.
It wasn't as ubiquitous as it is now.
It's true. Yeah, that too. Not everybody was carrying a camera all the time.
And maybe there was some things of who knows? Maybe you didn't know what that was. Maybe you didn't know what that person was doing.
Yeah.
Because it was, in some areas, still sort of fringe or new.
Well, even in that exhibit I was talking about down in D.C., the retrospective one had a few, I think it was Walker Evans who had the camera in the box. He used to get on the subway and take
pictures of people. Yeah.
I mean, there was a few of those there, and it's like, you know what? Those pictures wouldn't exist if he had to.
Look at the stuff that we all went to Philly for the Strand exhibit.
Yeah. Yeah.
How many of those? I mean, was Strand literally surrounded by, you know, people on their way to work, people on their way to home, just passersby of all types who from the photographs that we see paid him no attention whatsoever.
Yeah, just ignored. I don't know. It's interesting. And so go check out these links. I'll put them in the show notes. I think the pictures of the Moroccans are interesting. They're nice. But the story behind it is as interesting as the pictures themselves to me.
I agreed. There is also kind of a secondary story in that piece that you posted about this guy is trying. There's a curator of the photography museum there that opened in, was it 2013 or 14?
2013.
Okay. On target or the goal is to become the largest photography specific museum in the world and it will be in Morocco if he can make this happen. I thought that was interesting.
Marrakesh. And he says that younger generations are showing a greater interest in the arts.
Mm-hmm.
That young generation wants to own their own culture. I don't think there's ever been a lot of value put in Morocco and lots of Africa and owning your own contemporary culture. That's all changed now, and these kids want to own it. So it's a generational thing as well, you know, and that yeah. changes everything.
It still sounds so exotic, Morocco. It still sounds so exotic to me.
Marrakesh and, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, start singing Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
No. No.
You want to talk about the cardboard Bernini, or you want to save
I do
for,
want to talk
about, you know, just, I think that's, let's do that for next week. Let's tease that one.
Watch the trailer. Okay, here's the premise. The premise is Jimmy Glashow, is an artist, illustrator, does woodcuts, does illustration work, works in cardboard, makes figures, has been doing this for 30 years. And in this film called The Cardboard Bernini, which is on Netflix, might also be on Prime.
Okay. I'm
not sure. Anyway, he spent 3 years building this enormous fountain out of cardboard with the intent of seeing it to, in his mind, its logical end, and that is watching it be destroyed by the elements, letting it fall apart, letting the rain and the weather wash it away. And yeah. it's a fascinating film.
As the subtitle said, ashes to ashes, mush to mush.
Right. Right. he is just a wildly interesting person. I can't recommend it enough. I watched it twice over the weekend and took notes on it both times and just really fantastic film. So if you get a chance,
I think that it goes into what you were saying to me before the show, where it's like we talk about art being conceived, we talk about it being created, and then the idea is that once it's created, it is this static object that goes on infinitum.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Where the reality of it is that all of these things are going to decay, whether you like it or not, and if you design them so that they decay on purpose or by design. Like that is itself part of the art and is an interesting part of it. And it begs questions of intent. It begs questions of restoration of old artwork. Mm-hmm. It's all kinds of stuff that's in there.
Should we be restoring old artwork? Yeah, should we just let it go? I don't know.
All right. Well, let's save that for next week. That's a great discussion.
Yeah. Okay.
We talked about this Kickstarter of this positive paper last week.
Yep.
2 weeks ago. Something like
that. 2 weeks
ago,
I think.
And you had some questions about it. You wanted to bring it up again. You said, let me ask you on the show.
Yeah, okay. So, well, I love the idea of the positive paper, but let's say you're using 8x10.
Yep.
I guess never having worked in large format, if you do the positive paper, then you have only the object. You have that one object.
Yes.
Whereas if I shoot an 8x10 negative, I can make contact prints to my heart's content.
Yes.
So I guess I'm wondering.
I feel like we're going back to 1839 right now.
Right.
You're like, wait, are you telling me that I could have one daguerreotype or use a paper negative on a Talbot print? Go ahead.
I guess I'm wondering.
Why do it?
What the draw is other than uniqueness of having one and only one of these objects.
Well, there's that, which I think is actually a fairly large issue. No,
no, it is. I completely understand that part of it.
Yeah. I think the other side of it is a workflow issue, right? Where you could take these, you could go in, you run them through developer and fixer and you know, you put in the developer stop, fix, and water, and you're done. You don't have to process the film, then do a contact print, and then do that. You're taking out the steps of processing the film and making the print. You're sort of doing that all in one.
I would love to try this stuff, and I would love to do a diptych project where you do one with paper and one with the negative and then do a contact print.
Okay. To show differences?
No, and not even say which one is which,
oh,
but
I
just
see.
Show almost like the old sort of stereoscopic prints that you know you looked through the little viewer and they were side by side. So you've got arguably an identical picture one a paper positive and one from the negative, and not explain sort of anything beyond that, and just see what the reaction is to it.
I mean, you could argue it, depending on how good this paper is, it might be that the negative to contact print would actually be a better image. Mm-hmm. You could argue, depending on how good this paper is, because, you know, darkroom paper, negative to positive darkroom paper is really mature technology.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Where if they're formulating this thing from the beginning, you know, it might not be quite the what you would imagine you'd get out of a nice fiber paper nowadays.
Yeah. I'd love to try it.
Or coated paper for that matter. Yeah. I'm sure you'll be able to try it when they make it. There is direct positive photo paper used. This is not the first thing that's ever been made. I know this stuff used to exist. So in fact, I thought Ilford made one. Yeah. Ilford does make one.
I think they do. And
yeah, there's a direct positive paper. It's ISO 1-3.
Okay, so see, that's where this seems to
be
different.
It's supposed to be high speed, yeah.
Yeah, ISO 120 is what I think I remember reading.
Yeah, so maybe that's a big difference. But of course, with film and stuff, you know, the higher the higher the ISO, it changes all of the characteristics of the image, you know, the mm-hmm. dynamic range and noise and, you know, grain or what have you.
Yeah, here we go. Very high ISO speed, which corresponds to about 120 film ISO. High speed enables shorter exposures.
Yep.
Yada, yada, yada.
Anyway, interesting stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, post a note to the Kickstarter. They've got 34 days to go. They're over halfway to their goal. They're looking for 30,000. They've got 17,582.
If you get that, now you're just going to have to get an 8x10 camera and lenses and tripods.
Well, yeah.
Gets big quick.
Well, they have 4x5 as well.
Okay. So you need a 4x5.
I'll just borrow yours.
Okay.
I'm going to be close. Think
I
got to
pull
that.
Mine out.
Let that sink in for a minute.
Do you actually know what my address is? Because
I do.
Oh, shoot.
You'll think it's UPS, but
yeah.
It's not.
Ding dong.
It's a land shark.
Hey, did you see this article I put in from the New York Times Magazine of the unquiet sky of this aerial photography?
I did, and the first image
is amazing.
Of that, that was from Five for Friday 2 weeks ago. I used.
Oh,
that
did
Five
you?
For
I was.
Friday.
I'm sorry, I missed that. Okay.
Yeah, I love it because I first looked at it. I'm like, yeah, okay, so what? A bunch of people laying down. And then I went, oh, no, it's not.
No, it's not. Yeah.
No, it's not. It's super cool. Yeah, because it's captured with a drone.
Oh, is that how he did those?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, won a photojournalism award. I forget what the award is, but for drone work.
That is pretty cool. Yeah, look, other people have done sort of the shadow from above thing, you know, at times. So that's totally cool.
Yeah,
is it George Steinmetz? Is that the guy?
That's not him. George Steinmetz.
Oh, that's a different guy?
I added that in. That's the Nat Geo photographer who would ride around in his parasail over the deserts and over, you know, villages and towns and get these incredible views from the air.
That's different terrifying. Have you, it's funny. I was at I was at the beach the other day. I went up on is parasail the one where it's like a parachute and then you're just a line down to a boat and the boat's just pulling you? No. Parasail is where you're actually.
You got a little motor on the back.
Oh, like
he wears
little,
like a little backpack motor.
Like the little, yeah. It's like a, take a lawnmower and stick it on your back.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. What is the one where you're paragliding? Is that the one where you're. With the rope to the
you know
boat.
What? Actually, I might parasail might be the rope to the boat. Paraglider is what that's the Steinmetz.
That's
thing.
What he does. Okay, so we had him reversed.
Yeah.
Okay, I did the one with the rope to the boat once with a 1,500-foot line, so it was like quarter of a mile down to the boat.
Yep. We used to have one of those. My father had one when I was little.
And I found that very disconcerting sitting in a harness that was. You know, carabinered into a bar that was hooked to a big parachute. And I'm like, my whole life is based upon these two carabiners holding on.
Yeah. Here you
that
go.
That kind of stuff scares the crap out of me.
Take a look at that.
Yes. Yeah. That kind of guy.
So that's what he has.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So that's pretty cool. I don't think that would terrify me, but I think that that's fascinating.
You're right.
Is that fair?
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think you're right.
It's so scary.
And, anyway, and you know what? You know what's not fun? Riding around in one of these? Wind.
Yeah, right? Seriously, though.
Because you know what happens if it collapses?
You fall.
Yeah, there's no gliding.
Yeah, see, that's... Nah. It's like these people who free climb, you know, free
like
climb.
Half dome.
Yeah, half dome or El Cap, and you're just like, you're insane. You have a bad day. Some chipmunk bites your foot. You know what I mean? Like, so many things could happen that are completely outside your control.
Here, look at this image. This is, if you like the shadows of the one that we just looked at, take a look at this one. Same kind of thing.
Yeah, same kind of thing, except this one, instead of kids on a playground, is camels.
Right. Isn't that great?
Yeah. No, that's totally cool. Very, very cool stuff. I'll put that link in the show notes to that image, too. It's good. How are you feeling? You feeling good?
You know, I'm a little tired. I haven't been sleeping well.
See, I've been sleeping a lot, and I'm still tired. What does that mean? Explain that.
I don't know. I'm just not getting good sleep. Maybe it's my mattress.
I saw where you're going there. That's really good. What?
See what I did there?
You like that?
I do.
You want me to read this thing? You want to read some of this thing? What do you want to do?
I don't have the read.
Oh, yeah. I can't share that with you? Okay.
Can you? You can get it. All I will say is I am so excited that we have these guys as a sponsor. I have been wanting to try one of these mattresses for months. Yeah. I've read such good things about them. I've watched the little NPR videos of people testing them.
Hey, my friend comes up again. Craig has one. I've yet to try it, but
I want to try it.
I know. So
we're talking about Casper.
Yeah, we're talking about Casper. It's an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price you'd pay in the store. The mattress industry has inherently forced consumers, into paying notoriously high markups, because you go to the store and they wheel and deal, and they have different ones at each different place. So
it's a racket is what it is.
It's ridiculous.
It's racketeering.
Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms, passing the savings directly onto customers. Casper Mattress provides resilience and long-lasting supportive comfort. Their mattress is one of a kind. It's a new hybrid mattress that combines premium latex foam and memory foam. And mattresses can often cost well over $1,500, because I know, because that's less than I paid for my current mattress. But Casper mattresses cost between $500 for a twin size mattress, or $750 for full size, or $850 for queen size, or $950 for a king size mattress. Which is crazy, under $1,000 for a king-size mattress. Casper understands that buying a mattress online can have consumers wondering how this is possible. But it's completely risk-free. Buying a Casper mattress is completely risk-free. They offer free delivery and returns within a 100-day period. It's that simple. Statistically, lying on a bed for 4 minutes in a showroom has no correlation to whether it's the right bed for you. That's why Casper has turned the buying process into a risk-free experience. They understand the importance of truly trying out the mattress that in all reality, you'll spend a third of your life on. Imagine that. Isn't that crazy? When you really think about it, you're lying on that thing for like a third of your day. Or old people like you, a fifth of your day.
I'm down at 3:30 after dinner.
It's an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. Just the right sink, just the right bounce. Two technologies, both the latex foam and the memory foam, come together for better nights and brighter days. Risk-free trial, return policy. Try Casper for 100 days. You order the mattress, it comes in a box, Jeffrey. You cut the box open, it inflates because they basically like shrink wrap these things in a vacuum.
I have watched
it.
I have watched this thing. It's fascinating to me.
And Jeffrey, you buy it, you sleep on it for 3 months, and you're like, yeah, it's not for me. You call them up, they'll come take it away. It's insane.
Yeah.
And the mattresses are made in America, which is always great. $500 for a twin, $950 or king size. Compare that to your industry averages. It's an outstanding price. So go get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/OTP. Sorry.
I wonder what they do with the returns. What do they do with them?
I don't know. Do they like, and how do they return them? Do they, I don't know. That's a whole other question.
Use the code OTP. Shrink wraps them back up.
They probably do. Terms and conditions apply. So thank you very much for supporting 5x5 and On Taking Pictures. We're very excited to have Casper as a sponsor. Yeah, they must have some kind of thing for that. Maybe they, you know, I don't know. It's interesting.
Maybe, what if they, you know, it'd be cool.
What? What?
If they gave them away, like to people in need.
To people in need, yeah. Cool. Well, we should talk to Casper. We should make that suggestion just for them. But it's very cool.
Yeah, I'm very excited about these guys.
Thank you, Casper.
Thanks, Casper. Yeah, I really want to try one. So, you know, maybe when I get over there to the East Coast.
And you need a mattress.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm all for you. I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Are you?
Yeah. Where do you want to go?
East, man.
Oh, wait, I thought it's go. Oh, it's go west, young man. It's go east,
go
old
east,
man.
Old man, yeah. Gotcha. Okay. What are we at on time? We good?
We are at approximately 1 hour and 10 minutes. So
we
we're
had a
good.
Little dropout, so we're good. Yeah. You want to go with the group and then the new assignment and then the photographer of the week?
I think that all works perfectly fine.
It's kind of a theme. So some really fun stuff on Slide. Great interpretations. Jens, love that. Like a Slide bass kind of thing. I think that's the implication there. Did you see that? The stand-up bass?
Let me pull this up. Keep going.
A lot of people like with their kids on Slides, which is great to see kids having fun in the summertime. That's fantastic.
It seems like Slides are better now than they were when we were kids.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we just had like a bunch of trash bags that we would like soak down with the hose to make our own slip and slide.
They had plastic when you were a kid?
I thought you were going to say they had water.
Would you have to get buckets out of the river and just throw them?
We had a little bucket brigade. Yeah. hate you. some really fun stuff though. Really, really fun stuff. People sliding, you know, in sports, people sliding down slides.
I like Nick's dark slide is cute.
Yeah. Bobby Tingle slide on his gun.
Yeah.
I like Todd, just the slide out in the middle of the little pond there. That's pretty cool.
Oh, come on. Penny Brooks sheets of slides, like photographic slides.
Yeah.
Two on the nose for you?
No, it's really good.
Oh, okay.
It's really good. And then, you know, just other stuff. Tim Lewis. Critwall. Tim Lewis, Critwall. Let's put that in next week.
Okay.
Yeah. Tim Lewis, if you are listening, we will get to you next week. Because that's good. What else? Who else we got? Just some fun stuff. Some great summer shots. Max Nex, I love that shot of the almost silhouettes at the beach. Love it, love it, love it. Did you see that?
Good stuff. Yeah, absolutely.
Stack of chairs. That's fun from Mo. Nick, the big slide. That looks great. You know what? You ever been on one of those gigantic, like tall slides like that?
Oh, yeah. No, actually, I haven't.
You
but
sit
I've
on, the,
wanted to
on
go.
The burlap sack or whatever?
Those are the kinds of things that I always wanted to do, and I've never gotten around to doing it.
They were staples at the LA County Fair.
Okay. Yeah.
And we, you know, as a kid, you got free tickets from the school would give you free tickets to the fair. And that was always one of the things I would look forward to, this giant, you know, fiberglass slide with whoop-de-doos and stuff. And you'd get on it with a potato sack burlap bag kind of thing. That was the vehicle that they would use and down you'd go. I always loved it. I always had so much fun. It was right by the Peanuttles booth.
You're having some serious memories of your days in California youth.
Yeah, I had fun there. Anyway, okay, so today.
What's the assignment?
How about voyeur?
Voyeur.
What do you think of that?
I think that it's risque.
Right. Provocative.
Dangerous.
Edgy. Yeah.
It's all those words I would never.
Yeah. So voyeur. Now, be respectful, people. Yeah.
You know, looking in people's windows.
Yeah. It doesn't mean like, you know, 1,000 millimeter lens from the back of a van, Alan.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, no, that's good. Voyeur. I like it. I'm putting in the show notes as we speak.
Okay.
Voyeur.
Voyeur.
Yeah. It's the French version of voyeur. Oh, wait.
Right. Right. Oh, wait. Whoops. What did I just do? Let's see.
You're right there.
Okay.
What?
Maybe this isn't good. Maybe we should change this.
Change what?
Voyeur.
No, voyeur's fine.
Yeah, but if I look up voyeur on Google,
yeah,
a person who gains sexual pleasure from watching others when they are naked or engaged in sexual activity, that's not what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but it has way more meaning now than it used to have, I think.
Okay, so that, I hope so, because that's not what we're going after here, people.
It's also a person who enjoys seeing the pain and distress of others.
Yeah, not going for that either.
Interestingly, use over time only really started in the 1950s for voyeur.
Should it not be voyeur?
What is a synonym? A peeping Tom?
No.
Pervert?
No.
Watcher? These are the terms.
What about just watching?
Okay.
Instead of voyeur. Okay. I don't want people to be all, I don't want to be creeped out by it.
Okay, then watching.
Watching.
Sure. All right. Soften yourself. It's all right. Yeah. You're moving to the conservative DC. So
I mean, DC's not conservative. DC's one of the most liberal cities in the country.
Yeah, the people who live there, but like, you know, overall as a location, it's government.
They're
solid.
Congress's whipping boy is what it is.
Yeah.
We know that you voted for marijuana, but that's not really what you want.
Yeah, you're not allowed to do that.
Yeah, it's like they treat him like a kid who wants Oreos for dinner.
Oh, Oreos for dinner. That's a good idea. Hold on a second.
Have you tried the new thin Oreos? I haven't tried them yet.
Thin Oreos? Does it have less cream in them?
The cookie part is actually thinner.
Is the cream thinner too?
I don't know. I haven't tried them. But I think the cookies are...
Okay, where do you come down on the
wafer thin?
Hydrox versus Oreo question.
Oh, Oreo.
You know Hydrox are older than Oreo?
Yes, I do.
Interesting.
They taste older too.
But I thought that's why you'd prefer them.
Oh, I like Fig Newtons. They're easier to chew.
Fig Newtons are delicious. I don't care. I don't care who knows it. All right, who's our photographer of the week? This is your choice.
Photographer of the week, Bunny Yeager. And this was, I don't know where I came across this, but Bunny Yeager was, and now there is an error on, there's a proxy error on her website.
On Bunny Yeager's website?
That's no bueno. Yeah, click on that. Did you?
I get a redirect, I get her site.
Oh, wait, there, now it goes. Okay, now it's fine. Okay, so Bunny Yeager, 1929 to 2014, so died last year.
Yeah.
Did a lot of primarily glamour, pinup, and famously shot Betty Page.
Yep. Yeah.
So you know, a lot of titillating work.
Well put. Like the classic Betty Page with the leopards. That's
right?
Bunny Yeager.
That's Bunny Yeager. A lot of you know, girls on the beach.
Yep.
Interesting. Now, question for you.
Yep.
Is this work, would this work be more sexual had it been shot by a man?
Oh, this is the Sally Mann question.
Sure.
I think that there is a certain place that a female photographer could go that a male photographer, if they went there, would be looked upon differently.
Is it less sort of
exploitative?
Yeah, I guess that's the right one.
If a man did it, or if a woman does it.
If a woman does it.
Culturally or argumentatively, perhaps. In reality, I think that people are people.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Well, what if she was a lesbian and into women? Would that be just as exploitative? You know what I mean? Like, why is that becomes a sort of a strange thing. But her work is most certainly influential in this world, and she's constantly pointed to as sort of a hero of a lot of female photographers, especially in the sort of indie pinup kind of world, the
sure.
stuff that's been happening.
That kind of burlesque world
yeah,
type thing.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Sure.
Yeah. So I'll put a, I'll put a link to the website in the show notes.
An enormous body of work.
Huge. Well, she shot for years and years and years, you know?
Yeah. I mean, one of those photographers that yeah, shot for 60 something, 70 something years.
Yeah. 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 I like, the Sammy Davis Jr.
Yeah. Isn't that great?
Sammy, he was a good photographer too.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally cool. And very, could very sing, cool stuff
from what I understand.
And also, she, gets interviewed a bunch, as I recall, in that Betty Page Reveals All documentary.
Yeah.
So I'll put a link to that too, because we've talked about that. And there's this video, Betty Yeager's Dark Room, Pinup Photography's Golden Era, up on is a Rizzoli book. Do you have this book?
I don't have the book. It looks pretty cool. The foreword is by Dita Von Teese.
Okay.
I wouldn't mind picking this up.
People love the sort of pinup-y stuff.
Yeah, and you know, it's I don't know, maybe it's looking back on it. It somehow feels
more innocent,
yeah, than the current crop of,
yeah. But every people feel that way, right? You know,
I don't know. There's a tonal shift. The current pinup has been sort of usurped by tattoo and rockabilly culture.
Fair enough. Yeah, I can see that.
You know what I mean? Where it really did feel more like Girl Next Door type of thing in the, you know, 40s, 50s, and 60s.
Absolutely. Yep. It's crazy, huh?
Yeah. Now it's kind of gotten lumped into the car culture and rockabilly culture and tattoo culture.
Yeah,
and
where this was more kind of just like a woman in front of the camera in her skivvies, like,
right,
being happy and young.
Right, frolicking.
Interesting, though, like, in that whole thing, very non-diverse models. It's blonde and brunette white women.
Sure, you know? Sure.
And that, I mean, that's partly a measure of the time, I guess, in the 50s and whatnot. All that was far more segregated than it would be today. But
I wonder, has anyone done, and maybe this would be a retrospective of, you know, sort of African-American pinup photography?
That's interesting.
Would that have been?
I mean, I'm sure it existed. I'll do some research and we'll find some stuff. Yeah, look at this. These are a lot of new ones.
Uh-huh.
I'll do some research on that. That's interesting.
Yeah, it might be an interesting, you know, thing.
Vintage black pinups. There's a lot of stuff from, it looks like there's a lot of stuff from the 70s. Yeah, not a lot of stuff from like the 50s. It's almost like pinup made its way into black culture later than it was in white culture, you know?
Isn't that interesting? I wonder, and I'm not judging, just asking the question.
Yeah.
Why? Was it because that sort of Marilyn Monroe, Jean Harlow, you know, whatever idea of beauty was blonde hair, blue eyed, fair skin? Is that a fair question?
The interesting thing is that there's old stuff like the James Van Der Zee, you know, that sort of like 1920s Harlem, like the Renaissance jazz kind of thing.
Sure,
yeah,
sure, sure.
There's some related to that kind of stuff, which comes up too, which is interesting. It's almost like it was there, as with a lot of African-American culture, like shifted away in the 1930s and didn't really come back until the 70s, you know, in the way, like picked up where it kind of left off a couple decades before.
But just was off the radar for two or three decades.
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, yeah, interesting
just
question.
Looking into that.
All right. I also put a link to the Betty Page thing. And yeah, I think that's it. You got anything else you want to add?
No, I think that's it.
Okay. I think it's good.
I'm excited. I'm terrified, but I'm excited.
To talk about Cardboard Bernini? Oh, okay.
No, about movies.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I'm terrified. Cardboard scares me. Completely unrelated.
Okay.
Watched, do you know who Eugene Merman is?
Yes.
Watched his special, his stand-up special that I think was taped in Tucson recently. Hysterical. Really, really funny. So if you like comics, Eugene is one of the voices on Bob's Burgers. But he's very, very funny. So that's on Netflix.
I will take a look.
I forget what it's called, but it's just, you know, search for Eugene.
Are you watching Humans or Mr. Robot?
I just started watching Humans.
It's pretty good.
It is pretty good.
Although I'm disappointed by the most recent episode, which I won't tell you anything. I'm just saying I'm going to be. I want to see if you're disappointed with it as well.
I binge watched the entire season of Wayward Pines. Did you watch this?
No. I don't know.
I will. It's Matt Dillon, Carla. Is it Gugino? Is that how you pronounce her last name?
Yeah.
Is it hard G's on both? Is it Gugino? Gugino?
Yeah.
I think it's probably Gugino.
Okay.
I don't know. Anyway, I will reserve until you watch at least a little bit of it.
I'm going to go watch the Cardboard Bernini because that's what we're going to discuss next week.
Yeah.
Podcast at ontakingpictures.com. Bill Wadman and Jeffrey Sidoris on Twitter. You could leave us a voicemail message like Tom from Michigan.
Okay, 347. Tom's last was great, by the way.
It was great. 347-687-9411. We love getting them. And anything else? Oh, join the Google Plus group. Go search for On Taking Pictures on Google Plus and you will find them.
What do you think about a DC meetup in like maybe September?
That's a long way out, so sure.
Yeah. I'm giving you notice, man.
Okay.
I'm putting you on notice, Bill.
Conrad will be very busy, so I could probably go visit my sister. So sure.
And then we got to do a New York thing. We've got to meet up at the Connors watering hole.
Well, that's a New Jersey thing.
Right.
We could also do a New York thing. We could do all three of them.
Let's do all three of them.
Okay. Got it. Anything you want to add?
No, thanks for listening, everyone. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
I'm so excited we got Casper. That's great. I want to try it.
Yeah, I'm going to go take a nap.
Do they have a do they have a showroom or anything, or is it all online?
It's all online. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
Okay. They have really crazy advertising in the subways, too. We're like,
oh,
Casper's
really?
For swingers, and like a Casper mattress and this illustration and like people on trapeze above it. Yeah, they're like...
Take a picture next time you see it.
They're kooky. All right, we'll talk to you later.
All right, have a good week, everyone. Thanks for listening. Going on and on the way we are for so long. To any fool, it's plain to see something's wrong. As this way, say what you wanna say, though I know your words will lay me out. So I can hear you think out loud. Going through your thoughts the way I have for too long. It's clear to me the way you see me. As this way, say what you wanna say. I know what you will say will leave me out, but I should hear it said aloud.